Hey guys, and welcome to Treetop Talks. This is episode 3 here. This is Andy Sherwood and Jay Halasek over there.
How's it going, everybody?
Our topic this week is going to be urban forests, and our species highlight will be ironwood, Ostraea virginiana.
Oh yes, very, very fitting tree for talking about urban forestry, and yeah, we'll dig more into that later, so let's...
Jay, you want to introduce the music before we get too far?
Yeah, that's a good idea. This is some instrumental by Miles Davis. I don't own this music. It's not mine. Found it on the internet. But we're going to have some jazz with us today, so...
Yeah.
Let's talk about urban forests.
Well, let's start with how we got into the situation we're in right now.
You know, yeah.
Originally, North America, the United States, was... pretty much covered in forests.
Right. I heard a saying once that a squirrel used to be able to go from New York to California without ever touching the ground. And that's pretty, you know, that's pretty amazing. We used to have really, really lush forests, chestnut, hardwood, oak, pine, just beautiful, beautiful areas. And then now that we've settled it the last, 150 years, give or
something
take.
Like that, yeah, approximately.
Yeah, the Industrial Revolution really kicked off, and we started getting these mega cities. And they ran out of room, and urban sprawl started to kind of eat away at all this land that was once forest, and now is farmland, and now is a city.
Right.
So you got a city sitting on top of what used to be a forest, and there's some pretty big impacts there for the environment. And, you know, if it's been used to having trees there for the last... few thousand years at least.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's got pavement on it and houses and
there's... You run into all sorts of problems.
Yeah.
Water permeability, it can't soak into the concrete like it can soil.
Right.
It's
where's all the water
drawn up by plants? It's got to run off somewhere. There's other issues because now we're using all these resources and not producing resources anymore. So just generally there's a lot of problems where there's cities that don't have forests.
Right.
So to mitigate this,
no trees.
We recognize this. We need the cities to put the people in, but we need to also have the forests there at the same time. And that intersection is where urban forestry comes into play and becomes so vitally important.
And you've really seen it recognized probably in the last 30 or 40 years, the importance that trees play in an urban setting. Because they've just been able to study it, do experiments, and look at how having trees can benefit urban areas.
Yeah. Well, in the 1970s, I think it was really highlighted with Dutch elm disease.
Correct.
As that came in and decimated the tree population in so many
just
cities throughout the U.S.
Out.
And that, I think, opened the eyes of the city foresters and made them realize that they need to pay more attention to what they plant and...
If you look at that epidemic, you had all these trees, and then in a matter of years, they were just all gone. In every boulevard and every house yard and everything, they were just barren.
Yeah.
They're just stumps.
It was like a desert after.
It looked like it looked like a whole new place, and I think people really kind of walked out and went, "Wow, this is depressing."
Yeah.
Going from having these big lush trees all over the place to just nothing and. Only seeing concrete and maybe the occasional home.
Right. And now we're running into a similar issue with Emerald Ash Borer rolling in. We have a lot of ash in a lot of cities. It's not quite as bad as Dutch elm disease.
Not quite, but...
Nowhere near 100% ash out there.
It's definitely noteworthy.
There are some cities that have 80% ash, and if they get 100% or close to it, close to 100% mortality, as is typical...
It's 80% of the trees gone.
Yeah, that's pretty bad still, so... Yeah, let's actually talk about that, since we're talking about percentages of species.
Yeah, we kind of got into there. We could go ahead and introduce you guys to the 30-20-10 rule. It's a rule that was taught to us by Dr. David Slezak out of the University of Wisconsin-River Falls. He's the arborist on campus, I would say, if you had to give that title to somebody, so... You want to go ahead and explain what the 30-20-10 rule is to our listeners, Mr. Sherwood?
Sure. So the 30 represents the percentage of each family that you want in your urban forest. For example, you want up to 30% of maybe the pine family, or 30% of the birch family, or 30% of the oak family, for a couple examples. And then the 20% is the genus. So you don't want more than 20% of the same genus. Now, for example, we could use...
that's a tricky one.
Here. We could, I mean, Ash, you don't want more than 20% Ash.
Yeah, we could go Acer.
You don't want, Maples, you don't want more than 20% Maples.
You don't want 20%,
You know, there's a bunch, you know, any of those different genera there that we pick, you don't want more than 20% of that. And then 10% represents the species. You don't want more than 10% of any one species.
Or cultivar.
Or cultivar, which is all the
more commonly referred to probably in the industry.
Yeah, right.
You know, the newest cultivar of maple comes out, you don't want to just plant five of those in your yard and call it a day.
Yeah. No more than 10% should be the same cultivar.
And that's important because what we talked about earlier, when these diseases come in, if you're heavily relying on just one kind of tree, you're very susceptible to all of a sudden going from having big full-size trees to having nothing.
Yeah.
In a real short period of time if these come in, or even, you know, once the trees die.
Well, there's that saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
That's really what this is. You just
want
to spread out your risk, have as much diversity as possible, so that if something rolls in, it's only going to attack a small amount of your trees, and the rest will be perfectly fine.
Right.
So... Yeah, let's move on then to the benefits that trees can provide to a city.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the biggest ones we found, and I know you're going to agree with me, is the tree's ability to control stormwater runoff.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge. Not only from the standpoint of lowering runoff, but it's also going to save the city a lot of money. Those stormwater runoff systems are expensive when they're man-made.
Yeah, I grew up in a suburb of Milwaukee, and Milwaukee really has this big, big multi-million dollar stormwater system, and it's been pretty problematic. There's been times where there's been huge storms in June, and it fills up, and they have nothing left to do with it, and so they have to start dumping it into Lake Michigan. But the problem is, it's the same system as the sewer system. And so, as they were dumping all this rainwater into Lake Michigan, they were also dumping raw sewage into Lake Michigan without treating it. Obviously, that's going to be problematic. So, I mean, not that you can completely go without that in a large city, maybe, but I think that really could be mitigated by more strategic tree plantings.
If you have more trees, you're not going to fill that system up. You don't have the need to dump it in Lake Michigan. The system can function as properly, like water treatment facility should.
Right.
And so the real, how trees do this, I should say, is through
that.
Their root system. So trees take up a ridiculous amount of water. They're like vacuums. Their roots are in the soil, and they're just creating this potential gradient by sucking in water.
Large suction, just
drawing
water in.
Large pressured. And then, so I read a fact once, and I can't remember the exact number, but it was over 500 gallons a day. Was what a full mature 40-foot spread tree will take up in a day. Over 500 gallons of water just throughout the course of 24 hours.
Yeah, I like to think of trees as the lungs of the hydrologic cycle. They're really what draw the moisture out of the ground and into the atmosphere to get that cycle moving.
Through respiration, they put all that water right back into the atmosphere, and that's what drives our seasonal weather patterns and everything, honestly, you know, rainfall and whatnot. So, trees are able to just get rid of a lot of this stormwater runoff that creates a huge issue for our urban areas, and it's super important, and that's probably one of their biggest benefits. What else do we got for them?
Well, we also got air pollution on this list. I mean, air pollution's a huge problem in a lot of cities. That
not so much maybe in America, but if you go over to more some of the older nations over in China, Japan,
the newly industrialized nations,
where they're starting to see some of these pollution effects really take hold.
Indonesia,
the shores of India,
that kind of area.
You know, it's
if they can adopt some of these urban forestry practices, I think they can make a big impact on their air quality. And I think that's something every city can benefit from, really. Every place can use better air quality.
Right.
So more trees everywhere gives us cleaner air everywhere, less CO2 in the air. Trees are a great stockpile for CO2. We need to put it somewhere. Why not in trees?
In the same way that trees draw up water through their roots, They're constantly taking in CO2 in their leaves. That's what they do.
CO2
they have,
and everything else in the air, all those pollutants.
They have
filtering it out.
Just these tiny little holes, and it just sucks in CO2 all day for it to use. And that's really important to get that out of the atmosphere, because we're all aware of the global climate change, and the greenhouse effect is definitely speeding that process up. So anything we can do to lower that CO2 percentage is gonna it's gonna help us out as humans.
Just try to keep that carbon out of the atmosphere as much as we can, at least. So we can also talk about how trees act as a habitat and food source for birds, insects, other animals. Just kind of like we were talking about how cities replace forests in a lot of cases, then all this wildlife is left without anywhere to live, nothing to eat. So replacing that with an urban forest is a great way to provide for these animals that need it. And especially right now, with the pollinators are really going downhill fast. And trees are not, most people think that trees are not huge on insect pollination.
Right.
But a lot of trees actually
are. There are a lot of trees that are super important.
Many,
Malus species,
absolutely.
Very important for bees and like food for them.
Any of those showy, flowery trees are all going to be insect pollinated. And those are important for
the insects. It provides habitat for it, and it keeps the nature around. You like to see birds and wildlife usually in your yard and area, so trees are a great way to make that happen.
Keep the ecosystem healthy and alive around us. That's that goal. And last episode we talked about strategically planting trees to keep buildings cool and provide energy benefits. These same concepts can be applied over an entire city.
Mm-hmm.
Through strategic urban forestry and individual property owners within the city planting trees properly, they can make a big impact on the amount of energy that a city uses as a whole.
You think think of the energy that a large urban area, consumes, and especially up here in a northern climate during the winter. I mean, think about all the fossil fuels that we burn just to heat the homes. Mm-hmm. If you can prevent your home from losing heat through the use of like urban forestry, like we talked about, planting stuff on that north wall there, if you got a north wind coming in, it can really make a huge difference, and vice versa in the summer, putting shade trees on the south side of your house so you get that cooling effect if you're running your air conditioning. But it can all make a difference, especially in those urban areas, and less drain on the power grid.
It's all super important. So when talking about selecting trees, it's important to remember that there is kind of limited selection for street trees in particular. Those little tree coffins that we like to refer to, there's not a lot of trees that can survive there,
and this is
none that can thrive there.
Probably due mostly to just trees naturally being these really, really big things.
Right.
They usually need a lot of space, but
not to mention that space is typically compacted, degraded soil.
Yeah. So you can't really have, the roots are just going to get contained right in right in that top foot there.
Right. So right off the bat, we're limited, and that's part of what causes these monoculture situations or these high percentages of species that we see. But it's something that we need to keep in mind and just keep branching out and trying new different trees. It's okay if they die. We just need to try, see what can survive where. It's always important just to try diversity. Sometimes you'll be surprised about what can live. And that's how we learn new things. And especially our species for the week is, ironwood. That's a great street tree because it's small and can tolerate compacted, low aeration soils like those conditions. So
it's a great transition into the ironwood there, because a tree only gets about 25 to 40 feet tall, so
at maturity.
You have a little, at maturity, so you got a pretty small tree for the majority of its life.
Right.
And so you can plant that in an area where you might not be able to plant, say, a maple or an elm or something that's going to get pretty big. And so it's one of those trees that Andy was talking about there in those coffins, where you have such limited space to grow stuff in. You got to look at not just the major forestry trees, but you have to look for some of the more intricate species, we'll call them, that are not really well known because that's where you're gonna sometimes you'll find these smaller trees like the ironwood.
Right, and they're actually a pretty slow growing species if they have some amount of shade. And being a small tree, they'll typically be in the shade of another big tree.
Mm-hmm.
And in that situation, being so slow growing, they don't need a lot of attention. They don't need a lot of pruning. Even annual pruning is not necessary when they're young because they're so slowly growing. So just because of that, they're great street trees because then the city doesn't need to invest a lot of money coming back to them, which, you know, a lot of cities tend to take their time coming back to prune the trees. And it's problematic with trees like elms and Freeman maples that are so fast growing that need annual or more pruning. And, you know, an ironwood doesn't. Ironwood only needs annual pruning at the most, or even less probably in most situations.
Yeah.
Especially as it ages, even, you know, less and less. So.
Yeah, those slow growing trees, when they don't get big, it's really nice for the homeowner or the city that wants something that they are not going to have to maintenance very much.
Yeah. Right.
In terms of pruning, anyways. And so, yeah, it's a really great tree. Ostraea virginiana.
Yeah.
It's got a yellow color most of the time in the fall, but I do believe it also gets there's some cultivars that have an orangish color too.
Yeah, I think I've heard of some orangish red fall color cultivars. I can't.
So there's a little bit of option there
if
you got a preference one way or the other. You can look into that yourself if you're looking at buying this tree. But
yeah. The leaves they're kind of birch-like, but they're more long, kind of lanceolate. They're deeply serrated and alternately arranged on the stem. Buds are big and pointy.
Yep. What about the, let's talk about hops, Mr. Sherwood.
Yeah, okay.
Any of our listeners know what a hops looks like, hops look like?
A hops cone.
Yeah, a hops cone. Like, if you're somebody who brews your own beer, just whatever, you can Google hops cone and figure out what it looks like. Ironwood has something similar going on. Why don't you tell them about that, Andy?
Yeah, so one of the other common names for ironwood is hop hornbeam. And it gets that name from these hop-like fruiting structures. So, Ostraea virginiana has this interesting flowering arrangement where the male flowers and female flowers are separate on the plant. The male flowers don't really look like much, but the female flowers, once they turn into fruit, start to look like these hop cones, and they look almost identical to it.
Mm-hmm.
They're these green, scaly, it's almost even like a pine cone, but green and leafy.
Right. And it's really cool, honestly.
Yeah,
you guys,
they're persistent.
You should Google
they stick
it
around
if you're
over
sitting
the
there
winter.
Right now. Because it's pretty cool to look at.
Yeah, add some winter interest through the fall and whatnot. So, yeah, they're great. And the birds like to eat the seeds out of them. It's good all around. They're real cool looking.
It's a distinguishing feature of that tree for sure.
If you see this tree looking like there's hop cones hanging out of it, you'll know it's an ironwood. A hop hornbeam makes an easy way to remember it.
Right.
I think they're just
it's
cool
native
for that.
To the. Native to basically the eastern half of the United States.
Yeah, looking at the native range map here, it looks like
I think Minnesota is the cutoff for where it is.
Naturally.
But you can anything zone 3, you could grow it in. You know,
definitely.
It's got
that's
a widely
the native
adaptable
range.
Range.
I'm sure it can be grown over even in the western part of the country. Even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's cool tree.
And like he was talking about, it's a shade plant. So if you're in an area, there's not a lot of trees that can tolerate a lot of shade, but this one can.
Yeah.
You know, it won't mind it. So
right.
It makes it a great option for planting next to buildings too, because you can plant it a little bit closer because it's not going to get quite as big. You know, only a 40-foot spread, 20 feet on center, and you can plant it. You know, that's pretty close by.
Yeah, not a giant tree. Definitely can be kept under control with the slow growth rate.
What else?
I don't know. I think that's all we got to say about it.
Hey guys, I think that wraps up the ironwood for you. And yeah, this has been Treetop Talks with Andy and Jay. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
It's been good, guys.